Okay. Welcome to the January 19, 2023 meeting of the New Jersey Highlands Council. Roll call.
Kurt Alstead.
Here.
Tim Daugherty.
Present.
Michael Dressler.
Here.
Michael Francis.
I'm here.
I have you, thank you. Michael Francis.
Here.
Robert Holtaway.
Here.
Bruce James.
Here.
Carl Richco.
Here.
Michael Savatich.
Here.
Dan Van Abt.
Here.
James Vizioli.
Here.
Richard Voden.
Here.
Okay. And anybody else on the phone?
Jason Kane, Thomas Hull, either of you are on the phone?
Hi, it's Jason.
Hi, Jason.
I'm up here as well.
Okay.
Just to let everyone know that we have a new representative from the GAU office, and that's Thomas Hull. Welcome, Thomas, and we look forward to meeting you.
Thanks very much. Looking forward to meeting everyone and working with you.
Open Public Meetings Act?
This meeting is being held in accordance with the Open Public Meetings Act. The Highlands Council sent written notice of the time, date, and method of participation in this meeting to newspapers of circulation throughout the state and posted notice on the Highlands Council website. This meeting is being conducted at the Highlands Council office located at 100 North Road, Chester, New Jersey. Participants may provide comments during the meeting or by emailing them to the Highlands Council prior to or following the meeting up to close of business on Friday, January 20th, 2023.
Thank you, Annette. Please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Chairman's report. I have one item. I have some good news for the public lakes in the Highlands region. The New Jersey Department of Environmental Protection will be awarding approximately $10 million in grants to local government agencies, nonprofit groups, universities, and others to fund projects that will improve water quality and reduce the impacts of non-point source pollution from stormwater on publicly accessible lakes. The funding comes from a federal American Rescue Plan Act award. The Greenwood Lake Commission will be awarded $1 million for a comprehensive stormwater / non-point source management inventory and extensive water quality and HAB monitoring. The Lake Musconetcon Regional Planning Board will receive $572,000 for continued operation of a mechanical weed harvester. I'm going to ask Council Member Francis to tell us about the grant that the that Lake Hopatcon will be receiving.
I'd be happy to. Get me talking about the lake, you know, just buckle up because it could be a while, but I promise I'll be brief. But we are addressing the stormwater a lot. In the Burba Pack on itself, we're working on what we call the Witten Park. We have a grant for. We have somebody also from the Highlands Council on that for some of the planning. But that will be, that drains a whole mountain alongside Maxim Drive. There will be probably two or three retention ponds, and it's a large influx of water into the lake, not only which is salt and sediment, so that's going to be major. We'll also be looking at some sediment removal in parts of the lake, which is refreshing because usually the DEP doesn't want to hear anything about that. But I think they realize now that that's an important step into the health of the lake to take some of that junk out of there. We have Dr. Lubinow here who can fill you in even more.
He is going to later on.
Okay, good. But we take our lake seriously. We really love our lake. The four towns work very hard with the Lake Commission and also the Lake Foundation to do many different things for our lake to make it healthier. It's getting older, and of course things happen when you get old, including water bodies. You know, we're talking about aeration system. We're talking about getting some oxygen. We have approximately 700 acres of the lake, give or take, where there's no oxygen after 20 feet. It's a natural phenomenon that happens. And so we do have some people interested in holdover trout and holdover fish, but before you can even think about that, remember, after 20 feet, nothing could live, including fish. You need air to live. So we're working on some pretty sophisticated procedures to get some oxygen into the lake that does not include aerators. There are methodologies today where it's like an exchange of water, and so the oxygen hopefully will spread horizontally and it won't disrupt the natural layers of temperature in the lake, which could be counter to what we're trying to do. So we're working on that. Dr. Lubinow has some other good ideas that work on, but the west shore of the lake is the Berber Packer, the entire west shore. So we have a lot of skin in the game, if you will. We've done aeration in Crescent Cove independently, and it so far has been very effective. Actually, it's one of the most popular ice fishing coves on the lake now. So there's something to be said for that. Ice fishermen don't go where there's no fish, and fish don't go where the water is not.
And they don't go where there's no ice.
Correct. but anyhow, that's what's going on. That's why it's so critically important. I think it should have been a little more. We have a lot of work to do, but I'll take it. And we'll just keep being aggressive on getting more help from the state and the feds on this, because if we are about the water, and it's the largest lake in the state of New Jersey, we even as a council, should take a serious interest in that. It's to our benefit. And also, what we're doing with the stormwater management around it, not just the lake, although the pond could need some help, but the surrounding area, we understand and we realize that that's an important issue too, how we manage runoff, how we manage our septics. Last year, we took 40 lakefront septics offline with the help of a grant from the DEP, and we intend to continue that. Next year, we'll be working on the next 40, but it's incremental. The importance is the lakefront properties. You know, them septics aren't working. You know that. They can't. It's too much rock. So in reality, what we're trying to do is piece by piece, get rid of them and put them on a sewer system. So I won't bore you anymore, but I can talk about our lake forever. I can. We do care about it. Dr. Lebanon does. He does a great job for the commission. And the four towns do. We have regular meetings. The mayors will have a regular meeting to talk about the lake. And we do get out sometimes because I tend to be opinionated.
I'm surprised.
But anyhow, it's serious business. It is about the water. It is about the woodlands. So, you know, you'll be hearing it later a little bit about some of the stuff we want to do. We have a natural area preserve. It's about 300 acres that surround our town. And so I've asked my environmental commission to take a more aggressive step with that. So they might be here asking for some help with a woodland management plan. I don't know. That's up to them. But to me, it's all the pieces of the puzzle. This is just one of them, and hopefully this $1 million can help with a couple of pieces of them puzzle.
Very good. Thank you.
You're welcome.
One thing that has happened within the last 5 years is these are the two largest lakes in New Jersey, Lake Apacheta and Greenwood Lake, and the commissions from both lakes have really worked well together. They're helping each other with grants, with proposals, with lake management. And so I think that's a very positive thing for both lakes. Now for the chair's report, we move on to the annual election of the vice chair and the treasurer. So I'm going to open this up for nominations for vice chairperson.
Chair.
All right.
I'll nominate Kurt again.
I'll second it.
Okay. I don't think we need seconds on nominations, but that's okay. Moved by Council Member James and seconded by Council Member Holtaway. Are there any other nominations? Anybody else have a name?
Seeing none, they close.
They close, and this is a voting matter with public comment. Would anyone like to come up and speak about the vice chair nomination? Okay, you're getting off easy there, Kurt.
I was ready to be drilled.
Okay, please poll.
Councilmember Alston.
Just say yes or no.
Yes.
Councilmember Doherty.
Yes.
Councilmember Dressler.
Yes.
Councilmember Francis.
Yes.
Councilmember Holtaway.
Aye.
Councilmember James.
Yes.
Councilmember Savatich.
Yes.
Councilmember Van Abs.
Yes.
Councilmember Vizioli.
Yes.
Councilmember Voden.
Yes.
Chairman Richko.
Yes. I think this is your 12th year.
Right. Thank you very much for the confidence. It's been a pleasure working with all of you.
Congratulations. We move on to the election of the treasurer. Need a nomination or nominations for treasurer. Who would like to make that?
I'll make that motion, Mr. Chairman, Bob Haltaway.
Okay. Councilmember Haltaway, any other nominations? Seeing none, I'll close the nominations. And this is a voting matter with public comment. Would anyone like to address the council on this resolution? All right, seeing none, any other comments from the council? Please poll.
Councilmember Alstead.
Yes.
Councilmember Doherty.
Yes.
Councilmember Dressler.
Yes.
Councilmember Francis.
Yes.
Councilmember Haltaway.
Aye.
Councilmember James.
Yes.
Councilmember Sevetich.
Yes.
Councilmember Van Abs.
Yes.
Councilmember Vizioli.
Yes.
Councilmember Voden.
Yes.
Chairman Richmond.
Yes. I look forward to working again with you, Bob and Kurt, and after the meeting, you can discuss a salary increase with the executive director.
Double their salary.
Double. All right, we move on to the executive director's report.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The last month has been extremely busy, even over the holidays. The staff has been hard at work, and I'll just review some of the things that we've been involved in. But the first thing I'd like to point out is, if you notice from your packets this month, that we have a new format for the monthly report. What formerly was the executive director's report, which is basically just a data dump of everything that had happened. Our communications director, Carol Dickton, put together this new format, and I think it's a lot easier to read. It's a lot easier to get a handle on what we've been up to, and we've also made that report available to the public, which hasn't been the case with the executive director's report before. So members of the public now can get a better idea of the work of the council during the past month. And I think, like I said, I think it's going to be. We'll make some refinements to it, and if you have any suggestions or comments on the format, please, we're open to hearing it. But I think it's a big improvement over what we had. One of the things I like to point out that's been in my report the last two meetings been that we had three open positions on the staff. I'm pleased to report that we filled two of them, and we're on the verge of filling the third. Our part-time receptionist, Linda Acker, has accepted an offer to become our full-time receptionist, and she'll be starting at the end of the month. We've filled the GIS specialist position. He'll be starting on January 30th, and we've made an offer to our preferred candidate for the open scientist position, and she has not yet accepted that offer. It's pending. So those three openings will be handled. One of the big issues that we've been dealing with has been the proliferation of warehousing across the landscape of New Jersey as a whole, but in the Highlands it's a particular issue, and in particular because it usually involves the conversion of agricultural soils to a new use, being the warehousing. We are actively engaged in putting together Highland-specific warehouse siting guidelines that will take into account the resources of the Highlands and the Highlands Regional Master Plan in making suggestions as to where those warehouses should go, and more importantly, where they should not go. And the Office of Planning Advocacy came out with statewide guidelines on warehouse siting. A lot of those elements will be contained within our guidelines. However, the particular unique circumstances that we face here in the Highlands will be front and center in our document. Towards that end, there are two bills pending in the legislature that deal with the siting of warehousing in the state as a whole. We entered comments to both of those bills requesting that any bill that's passed contain the provision that that warehouse siting guidelines within the Highlands have to respect and be consistent with the Highlands Regional Master Plan. So the addition of those two provisions to those two bills would ensure that the Highlands Regional Master Plan plays an appropriate role in determining the siting of these facilities. We continue to move forward on our forest management guidelines. Again, same thing. There's an effort statewide through the Forest Task Force that Senator Smith convened to come up with best management practices for the state as a whole. That's fine. We have particular circumstances here in the Highlands, number one, because of the unique ecological conditions that are here, but also because of the role that the Highlands plays in the state's water supply, that any forest management practices, any activities that take place, have to respect both the regional master plan and the ability of those forests to play their appropriate role in providing for the quantity and quality of drinking water within the region, because we do provide the 70% of the state. Similarly, we submitted comments to Senator Smith, who convened the task force, asking for two things in any legislation that comes out of the task force's work. One is that it directs the Highlands to come up with those guidelines and best management practices that we've been working on. And the second is that any forest management plan for lands anywhere within the Highlands, that those plans would have to be consistent with those Highland-specific forest management best practices. So that, again, getting the Highlands not just involved in the activities, but to make sure that they're consistent with the policies and goals of the Highlands Regional Master Plan. Another difficult issue that we're wading into is part of a whole host of things that we're looking at. For your consideration today, the Affordable Housing Subcommittee will be reporting out on an RFQ to be issued by the Highlands Council for support and guidance in developing affordable housing policies for the 88 municipalities that will be applied towards the round four obligations that will be determined starting in 2025. Just like everything else that I've talked about here today, those obligations need to be informed by the Highlands Regional Master Plan. We have to be in a position to provide sound, rational guidance to our municipalities in order to serve them appropriately. And we have to make sure that those municipalities are both meeting their affordable housing obligation under their constitutional obligation, but also meeting it in a manner that's consistent with the Highlands Regional Master Plan, so that the number of housing units that are built, the location of those units, and the manner in which they're built is not at odds with the Highlands Regional Master Plan and not at odds with their constitutional obligation. A very difficult needle to thread, but that's why we're here. Right, we're here to take on this difficult issue and to be a resource for those 88 municipalities going forward. And this is the first step in that. We hope that by issuing that RFQ, that we're going to be far enough ahead of the game so that when the 2025 round comes to bear, that we're in a position where we can provide appropriate guidance. It'll be right here. We're at the beginning of 2023. It's going to be upon us before we know it, so we need to get going on this now. Another issue that's important, and again raises in importance because of recent developments, we've for your consideration today, coming out of the Plan Conformance Committee, is a resolution from the council requesting an allocation from the corporate business tax that currently goes to Green Acres, the SADC, and the State Historic Preservation Commission, that a portion of that corporate business tax be allocated for open space purchases within the Highlands that we would administer. This would reinvigorate our open space program, which currently has no funding. We could then use the funds that are allocated to us to match federal Highlands Conservation Act monies that will be available through the federal government. That was just reauthorized in December. And we can't access those funds without those matching funds. A number of things would come from that allocation, just to name a few. It would enable us to essentially double the money that's available to us, number one. Number two, it would enable us to leverage that money with state, county, municipal, and nonprofit funds to pull off the bigger deals. But it would also enable us to get involved in the preservation of many smaller lots that don't meet the specifications of either the SADC or the Green Acres program, yet are very important for the future of the Highlands. And it would put us in a position where we would be able to deliver equity to some of the landowners who have been impacted by the Highlands. And it would also allow us to reinvigorate the HDC program by going back to the direct purchase of credits. Again, not the way that program was meant to be utilized, but it's the best that we can do at this time. We have over 2,000 acres, actually 2,600 acres, that have been preserved to date through the HDC program. This would enable us to add to that total. So with all those things in place, the ability for us to get that influx of funds would serve the state very well. Every dollar that will come to us will probably be matched. Every dollar that will come to us will be used for an open space transaction for the actual acquisition of land. On climate policy, we continue our work with New Jersey Future, and again, to come up with hazard mitigation policies for the guidance for our municipalities. Not only is it a new requirement under municipal land use law, but it's just good sound long-term planning. And just like everything else, we're working with New Jersey Future to ensure that those hazard mitigation plans are done in the manner that's specific to the Highlands. There are things unique to the region that are, right, we're not involved in storm surge or sea level rise, but yet riverine flooding is certainly an issue for us, but so is drought or extreme precipitation events. And it becomes a heightened issue when you realize that in the face of a changing climate where you can't trust past precipitation patterns, we're still going to have to have the ability to provide drinking water to 70% of the state, right? And through that changing climate, we're going to still have to play the role that the Highlands has in mitigating the impacts of climate change on the remainder of the state, not just within the region. This also includes the ability of the region to provide food production in proximity to the 20 million people who live within a two-hour drive of the Highlands, to make sure that agriculture is properly supported and plays its appropriate role in climate adaptation. Right, and what's finally going forward? So as busy as we've been during the past 6 months since I arrived, we are going to continue with the work that we've embarked on, but we're going to also look to engage in public outreach, engaging our partners, and that means both the municipalities and counties of the Highlands, but also the nonprofits who work here and the educational institutions that are active and can work with us. We're going to continue to weigh in on legislation to make sure that the Highlands' interests are respected in whatever legislation ends up getting passed. And just to give you a small sampling of what we'll be working on, we're going to be updating the open space plan for the Highlands. We're going to probably look at it as an open space and recreation plan. You're going to hear from a presentation today that we're going to step up our efforts on watershed-based plans. We're going to continue to become more active in agricultural policy so that the Highlands is seen as a resource for the agricultural industry within the Highlands and here to support them. We're going to continue our forest stewardship work on affordable housing policy that I just spoke about. We're going to be engaging in some research work with Montclair University on harmful algal blooms coming up, and we are going to get the state climatologist to site a weather station here at the Highlands for monitoring the weather conditions and the climate here at our site. We're actually going to fill a gap in their data collection, and we're happy to work with them to do that. So that's just a sampling of what we've been up to. Thank you.
Thank you, Ben. Would any council members, do you have any questions or comments for the executive director? Yes, Councilmember Savitich.
Thanks, Ben, for your presentation and talking about forest stewardship and forest management. I'm going to come back to my pet peeve again. You've heard it before about deforesting Sparta Mountain. Now, and I like that you are interacting with Senator Smith's committee and having people at the meeting and reporting. But since our master plan is exempt from forest management plans like the one that deforested Sparta Mountain, how can we prevent that in the future?
It's a really good question and something that we're wrestling with about how we present this, because I think it's important. There are a couple of things to note on how we're going about this. The first is that we have to recognize that that for any forest management activities, right, you have to think about what the impact on the water supply is going to be. Right, that's essential. Because we are going to put together our guidelines with that as the underlying guiding principle, and we're going to add to it the fact that we're going to not just look at this as a what you would think is a timber removal project, but really a forest management endeavor, where restoration, replanting, invasive species removal, those are all going to be more important than what's going on at Sparta Mountain. By having those best management practices in place, and by having any requirements for approved forest management plans for land within the Highlands to have to be consistent with those best management practices, right? It doesn't get around the exemption, but it does require the quality of those plans to be aligned with what work we are going to do. So they're still going to get to do the projects, but those projects are all going to have to be planned and designed to be consistent with those best management practices.
Yeah, but a best management practice doesn't say that you destroy a forest that took 300 years to build and destroy it in 2 days.
Right, and that's likely. Kelly and the staff are working on it now. They're going through the research and the public outreach. I don't want to predetermine what the outcome is going to be, but it is likely that it will say something similar to that.
Looking forward.
I think a really good model is how USDA was the old Soil Conservation Service, now it's the Resource and Conservation Service. Through stewardship incentive grants, through stewardship incentive practices and programs, there's a way, and it's, again, it's modeled through, I believe, agriculture with USDA, where you have a private-public partnership, and rather than holding a mallet over people's heads, you provide incentives, and you provide some cost share, you create a partnership, and you educate, and I think it's not as difficult a task as you may feel. While respecting private property ownership rights and the rights to harvest timber, but I think, you know, there's ways to harvest it that are good for the environment and provide proper stewardship and respect the other resources. And you were going to say something.
Right. What I say is, towards that end, another project that we're working on is our environmental value project. And what we hope to be able to do with that eventually is to assign dollar values to natural resources so that a private landowner who is protecting those resources will be able to take credit, whether it be for the tax incentive part of this, for protecting those resources rather than having to harvest timber to qualify, right? So if you're taking care of wetlands, if you're taking care of intact forest, if we can quantify and assign an appropriate value to those resources, the landowner who stewards those resources appropriately should receive credit for those as well. And that would take away some of the incentive that's there to engage in timber harvesting merely to qualify. But as you said, there are a lot of different conditions across the Highlands. There are places where the forest is degraded, overrun by invasive species, right? There's going to be different management practices in a place like that versus an intact forest like the northern part of the Highlands, where the forest is healthy, where it doesn't really need a lot of management, and activities there should be more designed towards keeping it that way.
And we should recognize that deer create a big problem to maintaining good quality forests, right? Because they're destroying all the regeneration that's going on, so getting lands opened up for proper deer and wildlife management is going to be an important component. And I think, Ben, you're right. Part of the incentive to harvest is brought about through farmland assessment, right? And you have to have forestry management plans that provide for income being generated right now. So the only way that a landowner can maintain farmland assessment is through harvesting. I mean, there has to be money generated. So I think, Ben, you're correct that if there's another method that people can have stewardship of these resources, qualify for an appropriately lower property tax without being required to do harvest, I think that there's people who would do that, provided that they're then implementing appropriate stewardship practices, right, which you could do through this partnership and through some incentives.
Yeah, but Sparta Mountain is a public forest.
Understood.
I understand private people culling their forest and making money on it. I've done that myself in a forest that I own, but I won't clear cut it like they did in Sparta Mountain, and that's public land. We should not be able to cut deforest public land. no matter what the exemption says in the Highlands Act.
Right, and our recommendation to Senator Smith was that the Highland-specific BMPs would apply to both public and private land, and to any forest management plan within the Highlands.
Any other council members have any questions or comments for the executive director? Seeing none, we will now move on. We need the approval of Highlands Council meetings of December 1st, 2022. So we need a motion and a second.
So moved.
Moved by Council Member Altaway and seconded by Council Member Halstead. Any discussion? Seeing none, please poll.
Council Member Halstead.
Yes.
Council Member Doherty.
Yes.
Council Member Dressler.
Yes.
Council Member Francis.
Yes.
Council Member Halstead.
Aye.
Council Member James.
Yes.
Council Member Sevetich.
Yes.
Council Member Van Abst.
Yes.
Council Member Vizioli.
Yes.
Council Member Bowden.
Yes.
Chairman Richko.
Yes. We move on to the Affordable Housing Committee. We have a Council Member Vizioli is the chairperson. He's going to give a brief report about our meeting that we had today.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The committee has been meeting, and as recently as today at 2:30, I guess it was, we met again, and we reviewed the initial proposal, if you will, and we discussed a potential revision in some detail. And what we're looking forward to now is somewhere around February 1st that the RFQ be issued for a 30-day release, and that's for the qualifications, if you will, for affordable housing. And I think that's where we're at, and we're talking around March 1st, perhaps, as a release to this council for further discussion in some detail. So I look forward to that.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. We move on to the Plan Conformance Committee. Council Member Dressler, we do have a consideration of a resolution. Council Member Dressler is the chairperson. Mike?
Chair, we had a meeting of the committee in December, and a couple of proposals brought up at that time. I can't see from here if Mary Jude is there today.
I am. She is.
Mary Jude, can you brief the council on what we talked about?
Sure.
She said sure.
Okay.
So we discussed the issue that Ben already raised about doing the request for funding from the CBT for Highlands purposes. And we also requested approval to publish the Alpha Center designation petition for 30 days, which is now being taking public comment. And those are the two main items that were discussed at the committee meeting.
Okay, and today we just have the resolution on requesting an allocation for the CBT.
Correct.
Right. Yeah, the Alpha Center probably will be on for the March meeting.
Correct. All right, so we have this resolution. We need a motion and a second.
I'll make the motion.
Moved by Council Member Dressler. We need a second.
Second.
Second by Council Member Van Abst. Before we have a discussion on the council, this is a voting matter with public comment. Would anyone like to address the council on this resolution only? All right, seeing none, council discussion. Anybody would like to bring anything up about this resolution? All right, seeing none, please poll.
Council Member Halstead.
Yes.
Council Member Doherty.
Yes.
Council Member Dressler.
Yes.
Council Member Francis.
Yes.
Council Member Halstead.
Aye.
Council Member James.
Yes.
Council Member Sevetich.
Yes.
Council Member Van Abst.
Yes.
Council Member Vizioli.
Yes.
Council Member Bowden.
Yes.
Chairman Richko.
Yes. We now have the Budget and Finance Committee.
Councilmember Holtaway is the chairperson, and I'll turn it over to him at this time.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Now, the Budget and Finance Committee is recommending the approval of two grants totaling $199,000. All grants are reimbursement based, with final budget amounts determined by the approved scope of work. Township of Vernon, first, the Township of Vernon is requesting a grant of $149,000 to conduct a water quality assessment of 13 of the township's lakes. The project will identify issues in those watersheds and develop an implementation plan to improve water quality in those watersheds. The next is local zoning, local control grant, which will provide up to $5,000 each for municipalities to review their current zoning. This will help identify the potential for inappropriate or unwanted development, some of which we have seen in the proliferation of warehouse development. Approval of this grant will provide the executive director with the authority to issue grants for up to 10 municipalities. And I think this is a great idea because so many towns set these zones up 100 years ago and haven't looked at them since. And I think it's good to focus on the conditions back when they first conceived a lot of the master plans. There's just old-fashioned, I guess. And I'll move that motion, Mr. Chairman.
Moved by Councilmember Holtaway. We need a second.
I'll second, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, second by Councilmember James. I just want to ask, is there anyone from Vernon Township that is here to speak on this? Okay, seeing none. this is a voting matter with public comment. Would anyone like to address the council on this resolution only? Okay. Sure, Ms. Hank. Yeah. All right, well, any comments or questions from the council members?
Just one, yes. From my perspective, this on the second part of this with regard to the zoning review. I've done this kind of work back when I was with the New Jersey Water Supply Authority, and I remember working with one municipality, and we asked them, what did they really want to do with a certain highway corridor? And they said, well, they didn't want regional big box stores, and they didn't want this, and they didn't want that. And we looked at their zoning, and it allowed for all of the things they said they didn't want to do. Why? Well, because they took some other suburban town's zoning ordinance and filed off the serial numbers and adopted them. So there's a tremendous value to this kind of forensic zoning analysis. Because otherwise you don't really know what you're doing until it hits you in the face, and it's hitting us in the face.
Good point. Very good. All right. See no other discussion. Please poll.
Councilmember Alston.
Yes.
Councilmember Doherty.
Yes.
Councilmember Dressler.
Yes.
Councilmember Francis.
Yes.
Councilmember Holtaway.
Aye.
Councilmember James.
Yes.
Councilmember Sebetich.
Yes.
Councilmember Van Abst.
Yes.
Councilmember Vizioli.
Yes.
Councilmember Voden.
Yes.
Chairman Richko.
Yes. We now move on to presentations. We have a presentation. This is for the restoration plan for the Mount Olive Municipal Beach by Princeton Hydrology. And I think we have Fred Lubnow, who is the Senior Technical Director of Ecology Services for Princeton Hydro. So, Fred, welcome. Come on up.
Thank you. So just to let everyone know, I gave this presentation at the North American Lake Management Society.
Let's move the microphone in front of you.
Hello. Just to let everyone know, I gave this presentation at the North American Lake Management Society's annual conference, and it was well received. With HABs, there are all sorts of dynamics that come into play. When the HABs hit at Lake Opakhon, we worked with the commission and foundation, the townships, the counties, and a five-point plan, originally a four-point plan came up. One was to update their watershed implementation plan. And at the time, the commission received funds just to do that from the Highlands Council. So that was addressed. The other was consider beach plans because the HABs hit so hard those nearshore areas and they generate these cyanotoxins that can directly impact people who are in the water. we ended up getting a Highlands grant to implement one of those on Lake Apacon at Mount Arlington. We also recommended evaluating innovative technologies, and so both the commission and the borough of Apacon received funds through the HABS grant through DEP to implement some of those. And then finally, we also wanted to do some type of study to assess what was the cause, the mechanism behind the HABS that hit Apacon so hard, and we received 319 funding to do that, and that was accomplished. So a lot of this was implemented, and a lot of it was implemented with funds that came through the Highlands Council. So I know the towns, you know, have been working very hard together, but the funding has really been valuable in moving this issue forward and addressing the HABS from a long-term perspective. So I'll just move forward on the presentation. Like I said, this was a presentation I gave at the North American Lake Management Society conference, and it was to specifically develop a harmful algal bloom management plan for a specific beach area. So here we see that, you know, when the original study was done, the original study way back in the early 80s was to collect a variety of water quality and watershed data, develop hydrologic and pollutant loads, and develop a management plan. That plan was updated in 2006, and that's when I was working with Princeton Hydro. I've been working with Princeton Hydro since the first day back in 98, and the plan needed to be revised, and that was the funding that was awarded to the commission by the Highlands Council to update that. And that's exactly what we did. We incorporated it into EPA's nine element WIPs. We actually now call them nine elements plus one. And the reason why we do that is we've added an additional element that discusses climate change. It's something that's not in the original nine, but we've added that very recently. But again, these funds to update the plan, which was completed in early 2021, were provided by the Highlands. And this is really what spurred this, I would say, very constructive group to implement these projects. These blooms that hit Lake Apacon, we've had HABs at Lake Apacon in the past, but in the past they would hit in September or October. And by then, after Labor Day, kids are in school, people aren't on vacation, the beaches aren't open, so it was never really a big problem. What happened in 2019 is we got this weather pattern where we'd have these intense storms alternating with sunny weather, and we go on and off like that over June. That's what generated these HABs, was essentially the watershed was rinsed of nutrients, went into the lake. What perpetuated the HABs, though, over the entire summer, and this is what we discovered with the 319 funding, because we have a 30-year data set on Lake Apacon, we teased apart that it's actually, as the mayor mentioned, that internal phosphorus load, that when you have no oxygen over those deep sediments, there's a bond between iron and phosphorus that's broken, that phosphorus leaches up into the water column. So now you have this phosphorus-rich water, and a lot of the cyanobacteria that are in Lake Apacon have gas vacuoles. So they can move up and down the water column. They go down, they fuel up on nutrients, they come up, they make those surface scums, and they take all the sunlight out competing the other algae. So the watershed triggered the HAB, but the internal phosphorus load kept it going through the whole season. So that's why we're looking at both watershed measures as well as the internal phosphorus load. And I won't go on too much into this. This is that four-point strategy I mentioned. Recently, we've added a fifth point, which is sewering the watershed. So, you know, the borough of Apacon has been working on that. And now the township of Jefferson dusted off their feasibility study. And I believe the funding for that came from the Highlands. So again, another source of funding that's been very critical in helping Lake Apacon and its watershed. So, and like I mentioned, as one of the components, we said we really need to have a handle on how to deal with HABs on the short-term basis relative to beaches. So the watershed measures, the internal phosphorus, it's taking care of it from a long-term nutrient loading perspective. But when these HABs are triggered, they can occur very quickly, and they can dissipate very quickly. So we wanted to develop these management plans on a local basis, on what a beach could do. And so that's what this plan essentially did. And the organization that first wanted this was Mount Arlington. So we were working on the Memorial Beach / Park Management Plan. So this is showing you, this is the drainage area that goes into the beach. And you can see the beach is that small tan area right alongside the lake. That's the drainage area, but you see all the little yellow dots. Those are projects that we've proposed. And we're focusing this, any of the watershed projects within the park. So that's why it's structured like this. We really wanted to prioritize, focus on getting the nutrient load under control and minimizing HABs as those nutrients come from the park itself. So we included a bathymetric assessment of Memorial Pond, which is essentially the headwaters of the park. So Memorial Pond is connected to Lake Opatcon through Glen Brook. And Memorial Pond is essentially, it's a BMP. It's a wet pond stormwater structure. We developed hydrologic and pollutant loads specifically for the beach. We identified both in lake, in pond, stream bank, and watershed protection measures. We proposed the monitoring of phycocyanin, which is a pigment almost exclusively produced by cyanobacteria. And the commission and the foundation and the Musconetcon River Association have really taken this program up to par. They monitor for phycocyanin throughout Lake Opatcon on a weekly basis over the course of the growing season. Again, these funds were provided through the Highlands Council. So I'm not going to go into too much detail on the budget analysis. This is just showing you the flows from Glen Brook on an average year, which is kind of hard to say nowadays, but from Glen Brook into Lake Opatcon. It's also breaking down the land use within that drainage area. So we use that because whenever we implement a project, we always like to estimate whether it's through water quality monitoring or some simple modeling. We want to quantify how much phosphorus is being removed. And that's really important because Lake Opatcon as a whole has a TMDL. And so we like to evaluate how much phosphorus is being removed by each project. And giving that information to the state and federal agencies makes it more conducive for them to provide additional funds when they know, okay, we're removing so many pounds of phosphorus or nitrogen. These are some of the causes and sources of the pollution. So we did a watershed inventory where we identified locations and projects that can be implemented. These are some of the photos showing you some of the sites. So a lot of it is oriented toward general maintenance and care, a lot of stabilization, minimizing erosion. We have a lot of planting ideas in the plan. Here are some specific projects that are being implemented. So you can see Memorial Pond is there. We have a couple recommendations and then some projects that we've recommended. Now, we've already implemented some of these projects. I mentioned Memorial Pond, so we did an updated bathymetric assessment. Now, Memorial Pond is a stormwater BMP. And back when we first formed Princeton Hydro in 98-99, one of the first large grants we got was through EPA, through a targeted watershed grant. And part of that, we actually dredged Memorial Stormwater Pond back then. We dredged it in 2000-2001. And back then, we removed about 1,000 cubic yards of material. And this is a standard practice for a wet pond BMP. They typically need to be dredged out every 20 to 25 years. Well, we did that in 2000-2001. We re-ran the bathymetry. And right now, we have about a little over 1,100 cubic yards of material. So that, it's been 23 years. It's time to remove that material again. So we're looking for funding. We're working with Mount Arlington and the commission and foundation to look for funding to implement this project. But I had some preliminary conversations with DEP, and the reason why I now call it Memorial Stormwater Pond is when I presented this that it needs to be dredged, they said, well, you'll need a lake dredging permit. I said, well, isn't this maintenance? They said, no, it's a pond, and you're going to have to focus on what you can do to reduce the loads going into the pond. And I had to explain to them that the BMP is the pond. You know, it's supposed to be dredged every 20 to 25 years. And then when I showed them the map and you could see how square it looks, that it's not exactly a natural looking pond, they're like, okay, we see what you're talking about. So we're hoping to get a maintenance permit and not a dredging permit. And there are some installation of some biochar. So that's the, you can see the buoys, those little floating semi-dark logs. They're filled with burnt wood material. It's called biochar. As part of the HABS grant, we started experimenting with some of this stuff. It's essentially burnt wood material that has a high affinity to remove nutrients. We installed it in streams. The largest biochar project is in the borough of Opatcon. In some of the large basins, we've installed them. And we've installed them in these ponds. And of the three categories, putting them in standing water, you get the highest removal rates. You'll get up to over 90% removal. And that's largely because of contact time. So the nice thing about the biochar is you put it in, and after 3 to 6 months, you remove it, and you can use it as upland mulch. It can just be used for landscaping. And so as part of the HABS grant, we had a training session with the four municipalities and their public works group. They were very enthusiastic about it, because one of the things they didn't like about any filter material is we don't know what to do with it when we're done with it. Do we throw it in the garbage? We feel bad doing that. And explaining that this material can be used as mulch, they were very receptive. So in the plan, we've mentioned biochar and that the highest removal rates are in standing water, so either in stormwater ponds, or we're recommending for Mount Arlington Beach actually installing them in the beach area themselves. In streams, you don't get as a high removal rate because you don't have longer contact time. It's only about 50 to 60% for a stream system. So they've been very effective in not only cleaning up the nutrients that would otherwise go into Lake Opatcon, but they actually cleaned up Memorial Pond as well. So people who live around that BMP were seeing an improvement. So again, another important management measure that we included in that, not only in the WIF, but for the entire lake, but specifically in the beach plan. We're also recommending floating wetland islands. So we've installed some in Ashley Cove as part of the HAB grant, and then we've just recently installed a series of them in the southernmost end of the lake in Roxbury as part of a 319 grant. So they're really great because they sop up a lot of the nutrients that would otherwise go to the HABs, and they create habitat for small fish. And not surprising, you'll see fishermen hanging around the floating wetland islands because the little fish attract the big fish. So another recommended measure for Memorial Pond, although we're in the plan, we do identify that we'd like to hold off on installing any of them until we can get the sediment removed. We also, as part of a 319 grant, receive funding to implement this project. So we have this steep slope that is eroding. We receive funding to do some stabilization and some planting of that slope. Again, that project was identified in the Highlands Beach plan for this project, and we got 319 funding. That project's going to be completed this spring. We also, as part of that 319, have a project in the borough of Opatcon where they have a wetland basin. We'll be doing some removal of some invasive species from that wetland basin. This is just showing you a schematic of a planting list we have for Glen Brook. Glen Brook is the stream that connects Memorial Stormwater Pond to Lake Opatcon at the beach. So we've included a planting plan, and we've actually got some funding through NIFWIF to initiate some of these stabilization measures. And again, this project's just starting, so I don't want to say it may be installed this year, it might go in 2024. But that project, again, identified in the Highlands Beach Restoration Plan, but we received funding to implement it. And then, you know, I keep talking about watershed, but there is a beach there, and so we did identify a number of activities that could be done at the beach. I've already mentioned biochar, floating wetland islands. We also discussed nutrient inactivation and algicides and aquatic pesticides. We really try to avoid the pesticides as much as possible. We would rather deal with aeration or nutrient inactivation with alum or some type of phosphoc clay-based product. I will show you that as part of the HAB grant, and the county provided a decent amount of funding toward this project as well. We did a nanobubble installation at Memorial Beach. And nanobubbles are extremely small bubbles that stay in the water column a lot longer, and they help to oxidize and break down organic matter. It took us, the first year it was rough to get it in, but once we got it installed and we had the vendor come up and give us some tips, these last 2 years it's been operating great. And what we see is it's essentially preventing the habs from accumulating along the shoreline. So it helps to agitate the water, and it helps to prevent an accumulation. But notice how brown the water is. One of the reasons is, and we've seen this at other sites where we have these near shore aeration, is we'll get more of the brown algae, like the diatoms and the chrysophytes. And those are the good algae. They're the ones, many of them are grazed on by the small animals. And more importantly, they don't produce cyanotoxins in surface scums. So, matter of fact, we just finished winterizing that system. There's one up in Jefferson, and then we have an air curtain in Shore Hills in Roxbury. All those were covered under the HAB grant. But again, in the beach restoration plan, we recommended this option, which was implemented. And this is just showing you the cell counts that we found of cyanobacteria. I really need to include the diatoms as well, because you see a lot more diatoms than you do of the cyanobacteria. But the color, the Shore Hills one, I have some befores and after, what they look like before that air curtain went in, where we had those near shore scums once the air curtain went on. And an air curtain is very different. An air curtain is literally just agitating the water just to prevent things from accumulating. So it was a very on-off situation. So as part of the HAB grant, we did use some alternative algicides. We used some strong oxidizers like Green Clean. Again, it's available. It has to be filed for a permit, number one. And number two, a licensed applicator needs to do the treatment. So we did some treatments with Green Clean on Lake Apacon. We did two locations. We did one along a beach up in Jefferson, and it had almost no effect, the reason being is where the beach is located, it's just you have a lot of water exchange. So it knocked the algae down, but then there was an exchange of new water. Where we did see it, effective, I don't have a slide of it, is in Ashley Cove, which is a 2-acre cove that's sort of separated from the main body of the lake. There we used the Green Clean to knock the algae down before we were adding nutrient inactivators to remove the phosphorus, and that was very effective. And again, it's because of water exchange. And that's the one thing I do want to mention is any of these restoration measures, whether they're in lake or watershed based, every one of them have their advantages, their limitations, possible permit requirements, capital costs, maintenance requirements. But there's no magic bullet, that everything has a value, everything has its limitations, and it really depends on your site, you know, what will come into play. So in conclusion, while the WIP has been recently updated, and we've actually been using the WIP to look for and secure funds for some of these larger stormwater projects, this beach restoration or management plan is really critical for Mount Arlington for their high summer season. When I say high summer season, I'm typically meaning between Memorial Day and Labor Day weekend, when people are physically in the water swimming. And what we're seeing is a combination of both in lake and beach and watershed restoration techniques are really required to keep these systems in a high quality condition. So, thank you.
Thank you, Fred. Do any council members have any questions for Fred?
Yes.
Okay, Council Member Savitich.
Hi, Fred, thank you for your presentation. Before I make my comment on your report, I want to remind you that I'm also a limnologist.
Yep.
With a PhD.
Yep.
And I ran a lake and management business for 15 years. Mm-hmm. I was president of it, and I did it. In all our reports, we found, of course, phosphorus was the key. But in order to show, like this biochar here, after 3 months, you said removal rates for phosphorus 70-80%. Mm-hmm. You have to show the concentrations of the phosphorus in the water. I see no concentrations of phosphorus in the water on your report.
Well,
over time at different locations, that's the key. That's the mm-hmm. the pudding right there.
Yeah. Well,
I don't see any phosphorus concentrations.
Yeah. So a couple things in the appendix, we do have all the raw data. And the concentrations are there. But you touched on something that we thought of that we're now doing, and that's how do we equate the biochar to a TMDL? Like, we can't just give percentages. You know, like, if it's a percentage of removal of a concentration, that's not a load. So what we just started doing, we just started doing it for a lake in Pennsylvania last fall, and we're going to do it with some of the other lakes. We're going to put the biochar in, and then after 3 months and 6 months, we're going to remove it. We're actually going to take the biochar and analyze it for extractable phosphorus, soluble reactive phosphorus, and total phosphorus. And we're going to take biochar that has not been installed so that we can actually calculate how much phosphorus the biochar has removed over that period of time. But we've been thinking about that, and we need to get that number. We just can't have a percentage.
Yeah, but still, the proof in the pudding is you have to show the change of phosphorus in the water.
Right, and that's, we have that data.
You don't have it here.
Well, it's in the appendices. I can make sure I can provide the appendices to you.
That's what somebody has to analyze. Did the phosphorus concentration actually go down?
Yes.
And did it stay down?
Well, it stayed down as long as the biochar was in. Now, the thing about the biochar is you can only keep it in for about 3 to 6 months depending on the concentration of the phosphorus. So if you have very high concentrations, you're talking like 3 months. We actually, and as part of the study, we actually went in and we periodically went and a number of times we collected that. We did see a decline in the percent removal in the ponds after like a year. In the streams, it only took a month. And we went from like 50% to 0% in the streams. But in the lakes, in the ponds, we were getting like up to a year. Even the manufacturer tells us that if you're going to put it in and use it for this, you can't keep it in forever. You have to remove it. And what they tell people who aren't measuring the concentrations like us, they said if you start seeing like microbial mats growing on the surface, then it's time to get it out. But what we've been doing is we've been measuring total phosphorus. We, for the stormwater ponds, for Duck Pond and Memorial Pond, we installed it right at the outlet. So we could measure in the pond and then immediately downstream. So we do have concentrations and we do have reductions based on immediately next to the biochar in the pond to what is leaving the pond. We can provide that. But I'm more interested in how many pounds of phosphorus is that removing? Because we need to translate that for the TMDL. And that's what we've been working with the borough of Apatcon, installing in those stormwater structures.
People at that meeting asked you for the concentrations of phosphorus in the water?
Well, we provided the, I don't know if you're looking at the fly sheets, because we had some fly sheets, which is for the general public. And then we also have available the appendices that have all the data. I mean, I can supply you with all that data.
Just let me interject here. If you can stay around a few minutes after the meeting,
sure.
And you and Mike can get together and you can get him all the information that he's looking for.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Is that all right with you? Good. Anyone else like to have any questions for Fred?
I'm going to hit you with a big picture question, Fred. You've been at this for quite a number of years. You've done all sorts of different projects on Lake Apatcon. You've been watching the situation evolve over time. Given the science that we have available now, what's your expectation for Lake Apatcon if we can continue these kinds of projects over the next 20 years?
So let me answer that by another question that was similar to that that was posed to me is, if you could do one thing at Lake Apatcon, one thing, and money isn't an object, and to fix it, what would it be? And I say sewer Jefferson Township, because the largest source of phosphorus going into Lake Apatcon is coming from Jefferson Township. And they know that. I mean, we worked with them to put together a pretty aggressive septic management plan with 604B money. And they've been really good at keeping those systems maintained in terms of, if you just pump your system out every 3 to 5 years, that individual contribution of phosphorus can be reduced by 10 to 30%. There have been studies by both Cornell and Penn State that have dealt with that. But unfortunately, it is going to take a number of projects to implement things, because Apatcon is so heterogeneous and there are so many different bays and coves that have their own hydrology, their own nutrient inputs coming in. The other thing, too, is climate change. We've graphed Lake Apatcon surface water temperatures in July, and it's statistically significant increase. And from that 30-year data set, we know that internal phosphorus load has not only increased in volume, but it's increased in concentration. So when that first plan in the 80s was put together, the internal load annually was considered 10% or less. If you look at it on a seasonal basis or a monthly basis during the summer months, that internal phosphorus load can account for up to 80% of the available phosphorus. So it's stuff like that. And the other thing too is what I didn't mention, I'm so focused on phosphorus. The most common cyanotoxin is microcystins. It's a wide group of cyanotoxins. That needs a lot of nitrogen. And there's a lot of studies to show that having, controlling phosphorus reduces the biomass. But if you're not also taking care of nitrogen, you can actually favor strains that generate microcystins, because those molecules need a lot of nitrogen. So we have to start talking about nitrogen too. And so how I roll that into the management plan, I say, well, that's why green infrastructure is so important. Because green, if you have a drop inlet, it's just removing solids and the phosphorus stuck onto the solids. If you have green infrastructure, they will help to remove some of that nitrogen. So there, septic management will help to remove some of that nitrogen. So we're definitely moving in the right direction, but there's going to be challenges with climate change and other issues going on. I don't know if I answered your question or not.
It's a sense of potential. I guess that's really where we are. So we have a sense of potential.
Yep.
Okay. Any other council members have any questions?
Quick question. Fred? You've made it through the two PhDs. Now you just have the low-level guy. Practical question. When you're removing spoils from Memorial Pond, where are they being deposited? Are they considered dirty dirt, or is it...
So you have to test them, and then you test them, and then you compare them to the state's cleanup criteria. And if they come up clean, then it can be used as non-structural fill. And so as part of the permit process, we have to find a location, an upland location that's been... any wetlands have been delineated, we have a soil control plan, and then it would be deposited there, more than likely like seeded, put some lime on, and stabilize it. Very frequently like ball fields. I can't remember what we did with the material back in 2000 or 2001, but I know we're looking at an actual beneficial reuse project in the southern end of a PACON, which will include some dredging. As part of that, we're going to need to work with Roxbury and the county to find locations where that extra material will go, but you have to test first. I can tell you it's very rare to see something above cleanup criteria. It's usually like an industrial stormwater pond. There was one lake that will not be named that in North Jersey, it actually had concentrations of copper and arsenic that were above the cleanup criteria. This was years ago. They did some dredging, but that material had to go to a special disposal site, so that just hugely increases the cost of dredging.
Thank you. Any other council members have any questions for Fred? If not, Fred, thank you so much. Great presentation.
Thank you.
And is he staying for your discussion?
Sure. Okay. I just have a couple slides.
All right. Before you begin, this is a discussion of watershed restoration and protection, and this is handled by our science manager, Kelly Cure.
Okay. So we want to build upon all the success that you have had. And
microphone, please.
Oh, Lake Patcong, obviously, as you all know, is not the only plan that we have funded. Chairman Richko mentioned Greenwood Lake was another one. And we've also completed an assessment of lakes and watersheds in Ringwood Borough. That one's done, and I believe it's posted on our website now. And then West Milford Township is behind that, and that's in progress. And following that, we have Rockaway, we have Byram that's jumped on board, and today you just approved Vernon. Very similar plans to this. Watershed-based plans are very important to the region overall because, as you know, watersheds don't follow municipal boundaries. And as a regional planning agency, we want to encourage the development of more of these plans, which transitions me to the RFP that we will be putting out, hopefully next week. We plan to issue a request for proposals to develop new watershed restoration and protection plans or update of existing plans. I think priority will probably be given to new plans that in areas or subwatersheds that have never been analyzed. And the process will be the same. The output that Fred discussed will be exactly what will be included in these plans. We've framed the RFP around the 9 key elements critical for achieving improvements in water quality as identified by the EPA. And these plans will enable, as Fred mentioned and has been very successful with, the respondents to apply for funding from the DEP for water quality restoration grants under the federal 319H pass-through grants of the Federal Clean Water Act. But as well, having these plans in place, they can get additional funding from other sources like NIFWIF, like you mentioned. And there's some other smaller, Sustainable Jersey, Watershed Institute. Having that plan in place is key. And it's already been discussed, you already took my bullet point here, about the $1 million that went to Greenwood Lake and Lake Hopatcong to do implement the projects that are in the WIPs that we funded. We are excited to see more development of these plans to improve water quality resources in the Highlands. And we anticipate targeting the region's nonprofits with this RFP, but it really will be open to any entity that has a need to develop or update a watershed-based plan.
Okay, thank you. Any questions for Kelly? Seeing none, thank you so much. Thank you. We have old and new business. Do any council members have any old or new business? Seeing none, we're going to move on to public comments. To ensure ample time for all members of the public to comment, we will limit comments to 3 minutes. Questions raised in this period may or may not be responded to at this time, but when feasible, will be followed up by council and staff. All right, would anyone like to address the council on anything? Yes, just state your name. An address for the record. Thank you.
Dylan Medici, Rockaway, New Jersey, with the New Jersey Highlands Coalition. The New Jersey Highlands Coalition opposes the proposed expansion of the Highlands Designated Center in Alpha Borough, as it is inconsistent with the goals and objectives of the Highlands Regional Master Plan to protect water and other natural resources of the Highlands region, and because it would result in the loss of Highlands resources, including important farmland soils, active agricultural fields, and sensitive environmental resources. Our biggest issue with the proposed expansion is the development of block 100.01, lot 10. This lot, located east of I-78, is located in the conservation zone and conservation environmentally constrained subzone. It also contains important farmland soils, and the entire area is underlain by karst topography. Although the center designation does not require a site plan at this time, based on the current industrial zoning and informal proposals, we expect that the Alpha Center expansion to this area is meant to accommodate a series of warehouses. Combining the recently built warehouses at the former Ingersoll Rand site and the warehouses that are anticipated at the adjacent Hopatcong Township and Hopatcong Township Center expansions, the multiple warehouses in the combined three centers and the three center expansions will result in a super complex of warehouses that will have tremendous negative impacts on the health and quality of life in surrounding residential areas. The cumulative impact of these warehouses must be accounted for and understood before any additional center expansions can be approved. In contrast to the proposed Hopatcong and Hopatcong center boundary expansions, which are primarily infill developments, the parcel in Alpha on block 100.01, lot 10 is not infill, but a sprawl development into an established active agricultural landscape with many preserved farms, including an expansion of sewer service area. These impacts include reduced water availability, less agricultural land to meet New Jersey's food needs, increases to impervious surfaces linked with increased flood risk and water intrusion in sinkhole-prone karst topography, generating more commercial traffic, which the region is unprepared to address, and causing excessive light and noise pollution, along with a host of other issues. Alpha has stated that an expected utilization of 83,508 gallons per day of wastewater treatment and 84,000 gallons per day of water use. This Alpha Center expansion is within a subwatershed that is currently in deficit. The watershed, or the water, wastewater will be conveyed to the Phillipsburg Sewage Treatment Plant, which discharges to the Delaware River, resulting in an interbasin transfer in a consumptive and depleted use that will exacerbate the existing water deficit in the region. Alpha Borough is a non-conforming municipality, and the grant funding and other benefits associated with the enhanced land use planning tools and flexibility should not be conferred to a town that chooses not to fully conform to the Highlands Regional Master Plan.
Dylan, let me just stop you just a second, just to let you know you have about 30 seconds left. Are you almost finished?
Yeah, I got a few more things.
Let's continue.
The New Jersey Highlands Coalition commends the council's support of bills S-3356 and A-4475, which attempt a more regional approach to the warehouse setting, and for which we are advocating for amendments that would require the regional authority to address the regional impacts of warehouses in the region. And in the Highlands region, that authority must be the Highlands Council. And the council must take a firm stance on warehouse projects that cause impacts not only to the municipality in which they are sited, but throughout the region and New Jersey as a whole. The Highlands, of which Alpha is a part, provide drinking water for 70% of the state's residents, and we must not allow that finite resource to be put at risk. Thank you for your time.
Okay, thank you. I think it was mentioned earlier that Alpha plan will be coming up at a future meeting. Is that correct?
Probably in March.
Probably yes. In March.
I'll be submitting my comments online.
Thank you.
Thank you, House.
Excuse me.
Any other members of the public like to speak at this time? Please state your name and address for the record. Thank you.
Good afternoon. I'm Tom DeLessio. I'm the executive director of the Musketeecong Watershed Association in Asbury, New Jersey. Thank you very much for the opportunity to meet with you and to hear your progress as you're going forward. And thank you also for the discussion of the watershed restoration plans. As a nonprofit working in the Musketeecong watershed, we're keenly interested in collaborating with municipalities, counties, regional and state agencies, and the general public, landowners, and others. We will be putting together a vision plan for the Musketeecong watershed. We've already started conversations with the Open Space Institute, and we have a grant from the Waving Pen Foundation to actually start this effort. So we would like to collaborate with the Highlands Council and partake in the opportunity to actually engage. The idea of putting together a vision plan so we're all on the same page is critically important, making sure that we're not only on the same page agreeing that we all should protect the water quality, but we all should need to have places to live and work and make sure that we can raise a family and have a quality of life going forward. We'd like to engage in the conversations on affordable housing and transportation and the other issues that keenly affect our watershed and our water quality going forward. And as a professional planner, I firmly believe the only way to do that to start with a vision plan before you even move to implementation. So we look forward to working with you on that. Our plan is to put together a vision plan within the next year, and we would like to be a collaborator with you and a partner with you in that effort. Thank you.
Thank you. We certainly look forward to working with you also.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Anyone else like to address the council at this time? Seeing none, we need a motion to adjourn.
I move.
No, I protest.
Okay.
Second,
I don't want to stay.
I was opposed.
Motion passes. Thank you all.
Yes, motion of the day.
Yes.
So glad.